On today's Question of Faith, does the number of times I sin matter in confession? Hey everybody, this is Question of Faith. I am Mike Hayes. I'm the Director of Young Adult Ministry here in the Diocese of Cleveland.
And I'm Father Damian Ference, a Vicar for Evangelization.
And I'm Maria Wankata with the Marriage and Family Ministry Office.
Yeah, Maria's back. Always good.
Mm-hmm. I like that new title, too.
Yes, exactly. She's one of us now.
Mm-hmm. On the fifth floor.
Stole her.
God called her to a new place.
That's right. God called her to a new place.
We nothing just affirm that vocation.
It's been very good so far.
Good, yes. So good to see you around the corner there, too. So the question today, someone was asking, like, so do I have to remember the number of times that I sin when I go to confession? Like, do I have to say, you know, I did X 10 times, or I did X, you know, it shows where I am, or did I do X twice, or mm-hmm. whatever. They said, they used the example of cursing. They said, you know, well, I could go in and say that I cursed 10 times when it's probably more like 1,000. And so mm-hmm. what's the deal?
I would say it depends how well you're going in prepared. So mm-hmm. how much have you thought about it? When was the last time you went? And are you knowingly not confessing to the correct amount of times, or is that really how you felt? So kind of your intent, how yeah. well you examine your conscience before yeah. going in.
And or are you trying to dampen this a little? You know, so, well, I curse a lot, but I only did it 10 times, you know, when it's probably more like, as the person said, more like 1,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. What do you think?
Well, let's quote some canon law here. I'm no canon lawyer. I'm a philosopher, but canon law 988, Article 988, paragraph 1. A member of the Christian faithful is obliged to confess in kind and number all grave sins committed after baptism.
Grave sins.
Grave sins, yeah, we can make that distinction. And not yet remitted directly through the keys of the church or acknowledge an individual confession of which a person has knowledge after diligent examination of conscience. So if the sin is grave, if it's of serious matter, then you have to name the kind and, to the best of your ability, how many times that you've done it.
Sure.
And so maybe cussing is not grave, but if it's a sin that you struggle with, it probably is good to say about how often it happens.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that when you name things, then you can then deal with the thing that you've named.
Yeah, yeah. And, right? And maybe the number isn't necessarily important, but the You can give an idea, you know. So, like, for example, when I go to I'll use myself as an example. When I go to – I have a bad mouth, right? We all know this. and so I will go in to confession and I will say, I curse like a truck driver. And now my confessor gets the idea that this is probably something that I struggle with and that I do often.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's yeah. probably good enough, you know. But I'm not going to – you know, I'm not going to be able probably to remember how many times I did this because I do it so often, right? So mm-hmm. I cursed 943 times. Boy, if you're really counting on that, that would lend towards yeah. scrupulosity, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But if it was something like an affair,
yeah,
then
right.
you would probably know how many times you did
Absolutely.
It exactly,
yeah.
right? Or what would be – or missing mass. You'd probably right. be able to name the amount of times.
Stealing something.
Stealing something.
Yeah.
Yeah, to that. So
murder.
Murder. Yeah, you would,
I would hope you would
know.
Remember how many people mm-hmm. you murdered, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I think it goes to, are you truly burying yourself and burying your sins to Jesus? Are you being honest, and are you really seeking his full mercy?
Yeah, there's an honesty that goes along with confession, obviously, right? You know, I would hope. Yeah, but at the same time, I think that, you know, you can go in and enumerate your sins, like, off the top, but have you shown that you've really thought about this? Like, I used to go to a confessor in a place that I used to live, and I used to go to someone that I knew I could really be honest with, that I could really be myself with, who knew me well. You know, I wasn't afraid to go to someone who knew me well, and mm-hmm. I would just say, look, I literally can't lie to you. Right? You know, it's that kind of relationship. I said, so look, here's what I've done. These yeah. are things that I've done. And they said that they always used to really appreciate kind of the honesty that I would show. And I would feel better about it when I'd walk out, you know. So I think that's just some advice. You know, try to go to someone that you can really be honest with and you can really open up with.
Yeah. And for some people, they like going behind the screen because yeah. they don't have to see the reaction of the priest on the other side. I know in the Byzantine tradition, you confess to a priest, but you look at an icon, the icon of Christ's face when you're confessing, which is kind of a cool thing.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to go behind the screen. I like to actually close my eyes, and I feel like I am truly talking to Jesus, but then hearing the priest's voice and in my head.
Yeah, and to me, it depends, I think. I often go behind the screen, and then if I'm making an appointment for confession and I've made it with someone that I know, then I won't. Then I'll obviously just go face to face. I'm also kind of like, well, he already knows it's me anyway. What's the difference?
I go once a month, unless I need it more often, and I go to my spiritual director.
Yes.
And he's been my spiritual director for almost 20 years. So at the end of the spiritual direction, then I often ask, will you hear my confession? And then he does. So. For me, at least once a month, and then more often if need be. So, but I go face to face because I just sat with him for 50 minutes, and that's how it goes. Yeah.
So I think what we're saying here too is like that the number of sins. Swish.
No, I actually missed. I just threw my lollipop stick and I missed the basket. So you keep talking. I'm gonna pick it up.
The number of times can be important. I think the more important thing is, have you really thought about this? As I think you said, Maria, you know, like one of the things that I often do, a priest told me this a long time ago, and he said that, you know, all of our sins sometimes stem from one thing. Like there's one thing that's going on. Like he would associate with the seven deadly sins, where it's, you know, maybe envy is your real problem. You know, you're jealous of a lot of different things. And so then you become jealous of something and then you do X. And then it keeps spiraling. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, it's impatience. Like, I'm an impatient person. And Maria's shaking her head like, yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm nodding to myself like, yes.
I get that, yeah. I didn't think you were shaming me.
Oh, no.
So, like, you know, I get impatient for something, and then I kind of go overboard. I get impatient with my colleagues. I get impatient with my wife. I start looking for other things to do. And one of my confessors one time said, I want you to think about something now. He said, that was a really honest confession. He said, so I want you to think of something. What's one of your biggest strengths? If patience is your biggest weakness, what's one of your biggest strengths? And I sat back and I started to think about it. And I said, ha, patience. And he goes, right. And this was someone who knew me well. Mm-hmm. You know, and he said, Mike, you have two guys on your staff that I live with. And they drive me crazy, and you have loads of patience. You've gotten more out of those two guys than anybody who's ever been in your position. And I was like, huh. And he goes, so the point of his story there was, you can do this. This is a sin you can overcome. I've seen it. You know? Mm-hmm. So work on it now. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not impossible. And I was like, huh. And I came away from confession like, yeah, okay, I can overcome the sin. And it did become something that I think most people would point out about me later. They would say, Mike, you have a tremendous amount of patience. And I would just smile, and I'd be like, yeah, okay, I guess I do. Yeah. It didn't stop me from going home saying, oh, good Lord, do I have to deal with this person one more time, you know?
Yeah.
I think part of the number and kind business is so that someone names what's actually going on. So, for instance, like let's say Sixth Commandment, someone could come in and say, sin of impurity. Well, what could that mean? That could mean a lot of things. That could mean impure thoughts. It could mean impure actions with oneself and another within the context of marriage, outside the context of marriage. So the specificity is important on behalf of the one confessing. It also helps the confessor understand a different penance, you know, if he's assigning that sort of thing. And I think also in terms of not just naming the root sin, which is what you were talking about, but those when you name those other sins, which are like the branches, they can help you get to the root.
Yes.
So they may be symptomatic; they may flow out of that root sin. But naming all of those is helpful. And the other thing here to avoid too, the other extreme would be scrupulosity. So you don't want to be so scrupulous where the focus is all on you and your sin, and not about God's mercy and wanting to meet you and forgive you and make you new. And that's like the balance we're constantly trying to find, you know?
Yeah, right. And I think, so as both of you were talking, I keep thinking about, well, I go in and I confess some of the same sins all the time.
I think, do most of us.
Yeah. And I think what's helped is, like, Father, you mentioned going once a month. Going to confession, for me, more frequently has made me more conscious of what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. So when I've gone to confession, I'm starting to get more to the deeper root cause, being more self-aware of why I'm doing it and try to overcome that so that maybe then that number goes down. As you think about quantity and quality.
Yeah. It's sort of like the Ignatian examine, right? You know, like you spend your time looking over the last 24 hours, and when you do that, you notice that, like, patterns develop. You know, oh, I see myself doing X. Well, when did I do that? And, you know, you say this all the time. Why did I do that?
Why did I do that? Ask the Holy Spirit. Why did I do that?
Why did I do
Reveal that to me.
Yeah. You know, well, because I wanted attention, or I was lonely, or I was, you know, I was upset about something, you know, whatever it was. And then you could see it for what it is. You know, you see the truth of your life. And then when you do that, it makes it easier to avoid that the next time. You could say, oh, yeah, well, I you could even, like, say, I look a certain way or feel a certain way when I'm doing that. And then when you start to notice that feeling, or someone else might point out the way you look or something, you might be like, oh, you know, okay, better watch out. You know, here comes the temptation.
Marie and I were talking yesterday about our workouts. You worked out a lot earlier than I did yesterday. But I often like to make the analogy between, like, the physical fitness life and the spiritual fitness life, because there's a great analogy between the two. So oftentimes I like to think of a retreat. You go on a retreat as a major surgery, and that it only really works if after the retreat or after the major surgery, you do your rehab. So you have new practices that are in your life. You're doing your stretches. You're doing your strength exercises. Or after the retreat, you're praying every day. You're getting to Mass more often, more confession more frequently. You're hanging out with people who share your faith. And then you become more sensitive to, just as, like, if you have a good workout and you're taking care of yourself, when you eat, like, crappy food, you're like, man, I don't feel good. My stomach hurts. I feel lax, you know, lackadaisical today. And the same is true in the spiritual life. You're more sensitive to sin. It's like, I don't want to do that anymore. That doesn't make it's Mother Jeanette, when we did our staff retreat, she said, it's like if you dust your house, when the light shines in, you see dust, but it's a sign that there's light in there, and that's really good. So the more you're seeing your own sins, and not in a way like you're beating yourself up, but you're just like, oh my gosh, I am so dependent upon God, that's actually better. And the same is true in the life of health. Like, these little things that I'm doing actually do make me feel better and thrive more, you know?
Yeah. And then you know that feeling, so then you don't want to give in to maybe the piece of cake at 10 o'clock or right before bed, because you know you're not going to sleep well, you're going to feel terrible the next day. So you can avoid that temptation. Yeah. You're a little bit stronger to avoid it.
Good example. A couple days ago, I came home to the seminary late at night and I was hungry. And so I walked into the big walk-in refrigerator where the faculty can go, because this is our home, you know. And there was a big old pot of chili, and it smelled really good. And I'm like, chili. But it was 10 o'clock at night. And I thought, all right, I would have instant gratification if I ate this chili with shredded cheese and oyster crackers and a little sour cream. But then I wouldn't sleep. I'd feel terrible, and the next day would be shot. So I'm going to have a cup of Greek yogurt. Did it taste as good as a chili? No. But in the long run, it was good. And the life of grace and sin is like that too. Like, you if you choose sin, you're going to pay for it down the line, even if it feels really good for a moment. But the life of grace, you may have to sacrifice. But then in the long run, you're feeling good, isn't it? That's how Ignatius did the examine too. Like, right, certain things made him feel like good, and then they didn't last.
They would last longer. Yeah, like if you know, he would look at the life of a knight, let's say, like Sir Lancelot or Sir Galahad or something, and he would say, "Oh, I could be like that," and it would give him some joy. But then the joy would fade, you know. And then he would look at the saints and he would say, "Oh, I could be like Saint Dominic or Saint Francis." And when he would think about that, the feeling would last much longer. And he was like, "Oh, okay, maybe this is better for me."
Good example, Mike, on All Saints Day too.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know. At my old stomping grounds, Busted Halo, this was sort of our unofficial day. You know,
patron day?
Patron day, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, because we're all trying to be saints was the idea. You know, we have the busted halo, but we're all trying to be saints.
That's cool.
So we make that our unofficial patron day. So happy patron day, Father Dave Dwyer and Jen Sawyer and you folks over Busted Halo.
Indeed.
And speaking of saints, Maria, you have a church search this week, don't you?
I do. So we're going out to Parma Heights at the parish of St. John Bosco.
So, oh, I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, so right there on Pearl Road, not too far from Incarnate Word Academy.
My alma mater, yeah. Incarnate Word.
Oh, right.
Father Matt Byrne is the pastor out there.
Great guy.
And I chose this because on Saturday, November 19th, we're having a marriage enrichment event, Strategies for Strengthening Relationships. It starts with Mass at 4 p.m. and then a dinner with beer and wine and homemade dessert by Ooh. Bruno's Catering.
Oh, nice.
And then we'll have a little talk. So, yeah, more details are on our website about that event.
Yeah, Bruno's is great. That's Saturday. What's the date in case you're
November 19th.
The 19th of November. Okay.
So in a few weeks.
So I grew up in Parma and went to grade school and high school in Parma Heights, so I'm pretty familiar with St. John Bosco. My pastor from my first parish, Father Ed Cordes, who we just buried last month, I'm pretty sure he was ordained a deacon there because his class was huge. There were 34 guys, and they needed a big sanctuary. And I heard this story from Father Ed, and I'm pretty sure it's true, that at St. John Bosco, they used to have a ginormous Persian rug.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is real. Yeah.
And then some folks came up in a white van, rolled it up, and said, we're taking it out for cleaning, and it never came back. They stole it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Father Matt Byrne, who you were just talking about, he told me that story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Also, Father Ed Tully, I think that was his name, he was the pastor before Father Libator, who was before Father Matt Byrne. And Tully was a Navy guy, so the rectory kind of feels like a Navy ship. But he's also an avid reader, so he has one of the best collections of the Church Fathers, like the library of the Church Fathers translated into English in the rectory. And when Father Byrne became pastor, I told him he could give those to me as a gift. But he's like, no, why would I do that? I'm like, I don't know. I just try to trick you because I would love that library. But anyway.
I have major hair envy with Father Matt Byrne.
Oh, yeah. He's got good hair. Yeah. He's like Dennis the Menace or something.
A little bit of beard envy, too. He has good beard, too.
So one other thing about the parish is if you're ever in the neighborhood, they have a 24/7 perpetual adoration chapel.
Yes, they do.
So I know not every parish has that. So.
And I'm pretty sure that they also, since they put that chapel in, have a Thursday evening mass because the Last Supper was on a Thursday. But, yeah, it's cool. And it's one of the first Eucharistic chapels, like 24 hours, built specifically for that in the diocese. It's pretty great.
I know Father Matt Byrne has young adults over there all the time to play sports all the time. There's a lot of ultimate frisbee going on and a few other things as well.
Well, they have the space there.
It's a great piece of property.
Yeah. Yeah, I played ultimate frisbee there with them, and it's pretty cool to play there. It's like I was pretty winded by the end of the end of the time.
Well,
but
while we're plugging events, there's another event that's taking place there on. I want to say it's the first Sunday of Advent. This is a priest-only event, but in Bishop Molesic's old diocese, he used to have an Ordo burning party. The Ordo is the little book that tells you what to pray at Mass, and so you get together and burn your old Ordos. And so Father Matt's going to be hosting. This is the first one in the diocese. So for brother priests who are out there in the Diocese of Cleveland, you call Father Matt if you want to come.
That's cool. I'll give you my Ordo to burn.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. That's great. Take pictures of that. That's fun.
I will.
Yeah.
Maybe a little video for the Insta.
Yeah. And so our gospel for this week is from Luke's gospel. If someone's brother dies, leaving a wife but no child, his brother must take the wife and raise up descendants for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married a woman but died childless. Then the second and the third married her. And likewise, all the seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. Now, at the resurrection, whose wife will that woman be?
Maria, I think you want to go first, and I think we probably have the same answer, so go.
All right. So, as we were talking, the Sadducees asked Jesus this because they did not believe in the afterlife and the resurrection.
So they were sad, you see.
Mm-hmm. And Jesus is trying to teach them, bring them the kingdom of heaven. So he answers with saying that, In heaven, there is no marriage. You're joined with God. There's no need for marriage as we know it on earth anymore. So marriage on earth is, it makes visible the invisible. So we can't see heaven. We don't experience heaven. We're not in complete union with God. So marriage makes that visible to us in this life to experience it. But once we're in heaven, we won't need it anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, there's no need for marriage in heaven because heaven is marriage between God and his people, right? Which is really cool. And there also are no sacraments in heaven. There's no need for them because we're there. We're in union with God.
Yeah, if you need another sign. Mm-hmm. It's my old joke. You know, on the day of the beatific vision, that person's going to say, I thought Jesus would be taller. You know, I thought the light would be brighter. You know, it's like the ultimate negativity, you know. You know, we probably don't need another sign if we're in heaven, right? You know?
Right.
So definitely you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely don't. Yeah, and that probably, you're right. Yeah. All right. So that's the gospel for this week, chapter 20 of Luke. All right. And a good way to end All Saints Day is to also talk about All Souls Day, which is coming up. You know, a lot of parishes have their little book of remembrance that they're writing people's names in, and so pray for that on the 2nd, and a bunch of saints' days that are coming up, right?
Yeah, Charles? Martin de Pours is the 3rd.
Yeah.
That'll actually be the 20th anniversary of my diaconate ordination.
Oh, very nice.
November 3rd, 2002. And then St. Charles Borromeo Day is the 4th. We got the parish in Parma and mm-hmm. the seminary out in Wycliffe. So, yeah, lots of cool – and tons of cool saints throughout the month of November. And remember to pray for the dead during November, too.
Yeah, we'll pray for your dead, and please pray for ours here. So we'll be praying for those folks, and I keep on your calendar the saint days that are coming up. We'll have that and a whole lot more next time on Question of Faith.